First, we know chili peppers can be hot, and they add flavor and kick to everything from Memphis barbecue to Thai peanut sauce.
Beyond that, though, how much do we really know about them? Our next guest traveled the world in search of answers about where they came from, how they're eaten, and why they became super popular in so many different cultures.
Matt Gross is a New York City-based food and travel writer. His recent piece for Airbnb Magazine is titled, How the Chili Pepper Took Over the World. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I understand this story is very personal for you because you are a chili fan, a chili head. What is it you like about chili peppers?
Besides everything, I mean, I love the... It's a kick that is physical. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. Once you taste that chemical capsaicin in chili pepper, your tongue reacts, your mouth reacts, your brain reacts, your body reacts. There's nothing quite like that. And I love how that makes me extra attuned to the food I eat. Not just about that insane heat, it's about how the insane heat brings out all of the other flavors in a dish.
Well, and you had your first experience with a chili pepper at a pretty tender age, pun intended, at a farmer's market. Tell us about that story.
Sure. I mean, as I remember it, I was 10 years old, and my mother brought me to a farmer's market in Amherst, Massachusetts, where we lived, and must have been September, October, because some vendor had a bucket of chili peppers, cherry peppers, the sort of squat little things, and took a nibble of one, and I thought, this is not so bad, and took a huge bite and burned my face off. Unforgettable. And, you know, the great thing about chili peppers, when you OD on them at such a young age like that, you realize, I mean, this is, first of all, terrible, but also you survive it, and you survive it, and you kind of want more. You want that experience of living on the edge, of courting fate. And ever since then, I got more and more into hot sauces, chili sauces, plopping chilies in my food, and it's wound up bringing me around the world and exposing me to all kinds of foods and cultures that I never would have otherwise.
Now, here's the weirdest thing for me about this story of the spread of the chili pepper, Matt. There are cultures where we think, chili peppers, Thailand or India, parts of China, Hungary, parts of Africa. Chili peppers, such a big part of their cuisine. They didn't have any of them just like 500 years ago, right?
Yeah, exactly. Chili peppers are native to the Americas. They emerged in the wild around Bolivia. They were first domesticated in what is now Mexico's Tehuacan Valley in the state of Puebla. And they didn't leave the Americas until a guy named Columbus showed up in 1492, and he and his people brought them back to Spain and Portugal. And from there, that's when the journey started. The short version of it is the Portuguese did it. They carried chilies to West Africa, to East Africa, to India, to Southeast Asia, and beyond. But all of those cuisines, Indian food didn't have chilies, Thai food didn't have chilies, Sichuan food in China didn't have chilies. It's crazy. And he didn't even have bell peppers either. Like, you think, bell peppers seem like such a basic part of, European cuisine, but that's just another form of chili pepper that they didn't have. So all of that stuff is completely new. The chili pepper, in the span of a couple hundred years, just totally remade cooking all over the world.
And when they were first just in the Americas, do we have a sense of how many different varieties there were then and here?
There's something like 31 different species of chili peppers, but only 5 of them have really been domesticated. The most popular, they're all of the genus Capsicum. So they're all, the most popular ones are the Capsicum annuum, which includes the jalapeno, the Capsicum chinense, which includes the habanero and some of the the most burn your face off chilies in the universe, and the Capsicum frutescens, which is I believe Tabasco peppers, Tabasco peppers are part of that category. Those are the 3 worldwide most popular. There's a couple other domesticated ones, but they were all over. And within those species are a zillion different, slight variations, one that's more wrinkly, one with a thicker skin, one with a thinner skin, one that's, some that are sweeter, some that are, have a more dry flavor, and of course, all different levels of heat within those those different species.
Right, it's like dogs, right? I mean, Chihuahuas and Mastiffs are part of the same species, but they're pretty different. Same thing in the world of peppers, right?
Exactly. It's just like dogs, but it tastes better.
Let's not even go there.
So Matt, you talked about that there's a huge range of heat, and there's, I believe it's called the Scoville scale. How is it decided how hot a pepper is?
Oh, man. So there's this guy, I think Ernest Scoville, Eugene Scoville, who over 100 years ago created this scale, and his idea was you would dry out chilies, you would soak them in a liquid, I think it was either an alcohol or water, to pull out the flavor, and then you would dilute that liquid in enormous parts of water until a panel of tasters could no longer sense the heat. So if it took 2,000 drops of water to counteract one drop of chili liquid, you would say that was 2,000 Scoville units, which is about what a jalapeno is. But that's crazy. That requires panels of testers, all this elaborate stuff, and it's hugely subjective. So in the last 20 or 30 years, they use something called high-performance laser chromatography, which basically just you take these dried chilies and extract some of their material, put it in a machine, and it says how much of the weight of this thing is made up of capsaicinoids, these chemicals that cause the feeling of heat. So that's a much more sort of scientific and locked-down way. And they've matched it up so that what you get out of the machine corresponds to what these crazy panels of tasters were figuring out on their own 100 years ago. And, you know, the ranges go, you know, down from like 500 Scoville units, 2,000 Scoville units for things like jalapenos or Anaheim chilies, up to, you know, 150,000 for a habanero to, you know, 2 million Scoville units for the Carolina Reaper, which is currently, although maybe not for long, the holder of the Guinness World Record for the spiciest chili on earth.
Oh, we can't. You just teased that. What do you mean not for long?
So the guy who invented the Carolina Reaper, his name is Ed Curry, Smokin' Ed Curry. He's this crazy South Carolina farmer, has been developing something that he's called Pepper X, which is reportedly 3 million Scoville units. And, you know, that's like half again as spicy as the Carolina Reaper.
Now, we're talking like this is a similar thing as like pepper spray, right, in terms of the intensity?
Well, pepper spray is like 6 million to 15 million Scoville units. So it's like half a dose of pepper spray. I mean,
in your mouth.
Come on, that's nothing. But I got to taste Pepper X a couple of years ago at the NYC Hot Sauce Expo. Ed Curry was carrying around a little jar of mashed up Pepper X, and he gave me a tiny, you know, like an eighth of a teaspoon of it. And it's very hot. but it's also delicious. Like, I spent 10 minutes yelling into a friend's, you know, video phone about how delicious it was, how full of flavor, I was out of my mind at the time because of the heat. But it was really, it's really kind of amazing to see, to taste a pepper that is so insanely spicy, but also so incredibly flavorful. So, I'm super looking forward to when that thing gets its Guinness World Record and when he releases it to the public, because that's going to it's gonna change everything all over again.
We're talking about chili peppers with food and travel writer Matt Gross.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you like chilies? What's your favorite? Have you ever had a really, really hot one? Do you use them in your own cooking, or do you leave it to the pros? What questions do you have for Matt about chili peppers? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with Matt Gross. He's a food and travel writer. He spent this summer in Jamaica, Hungary, and Thailand to learn about the origins of the chili pepper, how they're used, and why they're so popular around the world.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you love or fear chilies? What's the most memorable chili dish you've had? Where did you have it? Anything about chilies you've always wanted to know? Do you have a favorite to use in your own cooking? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
So, Matt, I want to ask a question about building up a tolerance for really hot peppers, because I worked in a Chinese restaurant for a long time. The cooks liked me, so they would share their own food with me, which was often quite spicy. I ate that a lot. And then I went and lived in Russia for a year, and Russians are not big on strong seasonings. Garlic is kind of the primary one. I came back thinking I could eat the same things I was eating here before I left and almost died because I had lost my tolerance. What is it? How do we build up a tolerance? And in places where they're really common, do people have a much higher level of what they can take?
I mean, the way to build up tolerance is just to eat. You have to, you know, start back at the bottom and work your way back to the top like Rocky. it's just how it goes. I mean, sure, you could launch back up to the hottest chilies, but you might not be able to take that. My wife, for example, after each of our kids was born, she totally lost her ability to take heat. So all of a sudden the kid was out, boom, she was back to square one. It was very frustrating. But, you know, she's worked her way back up each time, partly because we just have a lot of chilies around the house all the time. She's got no choice, really. In places I've been, like Thailand, I asked almost everybody that I interviewed to rate their chili tolerance. And the average Thai, I can tell you, rates their chili tolerance as above average. No one is ever willing to admit that they have only average Thai levels of chili tolerance. Everybody is slightly above average. And that can cause some crazy scenes. A friend of mine tells a story about a girl that he was dating in Thailand, and they would go out to eat, and she would measure her chili tolerance by his chili tolerance. He was new to the country. He was from New York. So she felt like she had to be able to eat things that were, you know, three times as spicy as he could eat. And this went on, but over time, his chili tolerance built up. So he started getting spicier food, and naturally she would get stuff that was still three times as spicy until, you know, they'd be at dinner and she would just be sweating and panting through the whole meal, unable to take the food that she'd ordered. But she was so determined because she was Thai that she had to be eating food that was way spicier than any foreigner could possibly eat, even if she couldn't eat it herself.
Spicy pepper arms races. Let's go to our callers now. Andrew is with us in Green Bay. Andrew, hi there.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. Do you have a pepper story for us?
Yeah. So we're beginning farmers up in Green Bay, and my girlfriend is from New Mexico, so we decided that peppers were going to be one of our specialty. And we were searching through the catalogs, and we found this amazing heatless habanero pepper. So it's got all of the flavor of a habanero, as complex as it is, which I just love the flavor, but without any kind of heat. It's actually terrifying to eat because you're munching on it. You think that all of a sudden your face is going to burn off, but it just ends up in this sweet, amazing flavor that it's almost more addicting than the heat that comes with it.
I look forward to trying those, Andrew. Thanks for calling in, Matt. And that speaks to not just the heatless part, but there's a lot of flavor in these peppers and a lot of variety apart from the heat itself, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way people talk about it is kind of difficult. People will say things are fruity or citrusy or sweet, but sometimes you get things that are a lot more complex. There's a kind of dry heat. One of the things we think about when we talk about chilies is, where does that heat hit you, and how does it work with the flavor that's in the chili itself? Is it hitting you right in the front of the mouth, back of the throat, sides of the tongue? You know, it's a series of pieces that all work together, ideally.
Let's go back to the phones, and William in Milwaukee is up. Hi, William.
Hello there.
What would you like to say?
All right, so I've got a bit of a story about my experiences with the Carolina Reaper.
Well, you're alive, so we know how it ends, but fill us in the middle.
It was something special. So it was last year, in summer, with the Woodman's down Oak Creek actually had Carolina Reapers in stock. So I decided, rather stupidly, to pick up a pack because I was planning on making chili that week. So after cooking up all the other peppers in my cast iron skillet, mind you, so it's already starting to get a little tough to breathe inside, I decided to put on just thinking, oh, this will help, just a bandana over my mouth and forehead, and just started cooking them up in a little butter. No, I started coughing. Everyone started coughing. The cats started coughing.
Oh, no.
And I basically had to vent out the entire house just to be sure that everyone stopped, you know, basically in the effects of tear gas. Mind you, it was delicious when it all was said and done. But if you're going to cook Reapers, everyone, make sure to be in a well-ventilated area and please use like a gas mask or something.
William, thanks a lot. Is this a thing, Matt? We have to have occupational safety measures before we cook some of these things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you should feel free to have the vents on, the windows open. I met some guys in Hungary who were not making traditional Hungarian paprika, but making crazy hot sauces with Reapers and ghost peppers and stuff. And they had gas masks. If they're making hot sauce, they put on their gas masks because it just makes it easier. If you're around that all the time, you take precautions. And gloves, please, gloves when you're cutting some of those insanely hot peppers. I have made certain mistakes before with not wearing gloves, and I have paid dearly, and so have some people who are very close to me.
We're talking with Matt Gross right now. He's a food and travel writer and recently wrote a piece titled How the Chili Pepper Took Over the World. Let's go back to the phones, and Marty in Whitewater is up. Hi, Marty.
Hey, guys. My little story is, you know, my son and I, we like the hot stuff, and we've been in a couple of places where either we have to sign a piece of paper, a waiver, avoiding them of any liability, or we've had the chef stand in the doorway and watch us as we partake of the wings. But the best thing was we were in Galena, and it's nothing but shops on either side of the street, and we're walking. All of a sudden, here's this guy coming toward us, and he's stuck in wind. You know, he goes past us. We're looking at him like, what's wrong with this guy? So we proceed forward a little bit, and oh, here's a new hot sauce shop. So we walk in, and of course, here's a bowl of ghost pepper sauce. You put a little bit of this on the tip of a pencil and you're good to go, you know. but the best part is reading the labels of these bottles. You know, our favorite was it had four nuns on the label. There was like rocket flames coming out from underneath their garb, and it was called Holy Effin' Sauce. It was more fun reading the labels, and, you know, it kind of tempered the heat.
Marty, thanks a lot. And Matt, a lot of creativity goes into naming the hot sauces, the hot pepper sauces on the market, and making them themselves. Can you talk a little bit about the world of variety when it comes to hot pepper sauces?
Oh, my God. There's so many hot sauces out there. All of those, you know, very colorful labels with names of sauces that we probably can't necessarily even say on the radio.
True.
That comes out of this great tradition of people discovering hot sauce pretty much like in the 80s. Dave's Insanity Sauce was the first of those crazy, super hot, ultra graphic labels. And they've been joined, I mean, that sort of movement of, I don't know, like a lot of guys into like heavy metal and barbecue and, you know, this sort of like tough guy American culture created that world of hot sauce. And that's been joined in the last 5-10 years by a lot of immigrant hot sauces, a lot of people who have started making hot sauce like it was done in the old country, whether that's Guyana or Panama or Mozambique. And then there's a whole sort of segment of very restaurant-driven hot sauces, people experimenting with cool ingredients and new flavors. There's a woman who lives across the street from me in Brooklyn who goes by the name of Queen Majesty, who has like an amazing red habanero and coffee hot sauce. And it just sort of feels very in line with modern restaurant trends in terms of how flavors are put together. She's won a ton of awards for that hot sauce as well. And it just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding. Getting into making hot sauce is not that hard to do, not that expensive to do. And if you can make something that people love, people keep buying it and buying it and buying it.
Matt, I want to ask you about one of the three countries that you went to look at chilies, because it's Hungary, and I'm not sure that would be one of the first countries people would think of, but paprika is the national spice of Hungary. What is paprika?
Paprika is just ground dried chilies, but it has evolved over hundreds of years into the signature flavoring of Hungary. The chefs I talked to there said it was in probably about 2/3 of everything that everybody makes. It's in goulash and paprikash, and in little dishes on tables. It is, you know, the thing that defines Hungarian cuisine. You see peppers on T-shirts, you know, taking the place of the S in Budapest. Like, it's just, it's constantly everywhere. But in a lot of cases, the people I talked to there didn't even know where it had come from. It had been brought to Hungary in the 16th century by the Ottoman Empire, by the Turks who invaded and took over most of Hungary and brought peppers along with them, which they'd gotten from Arabs, which they'd gotten from the Portuguese. It's just a weird, like, long, long chain of handing off peppers from one person to the next, along with the wisdom about how to grow them, prepare them, cook with them, and eat them. So it's, I mean, Hungary is just suffused with this red everywhere you go, and people are very proud of it.
Matt, briefly, as we finish up, I understand you're working on a book about peppers. I hope you'll join us again for that. You went to Hungary, Thailand, and Jamaica for this article. Where's your next stop in your quest for peppers?
Oh, man. I want to go back to Thailand because there's a lot more to dig into there. I want to hop around Indonesia and try some more sambals, which are sort of like Indonesian-style salsas. I need to get to Mexico. Oh, man, I haven't been there in a long time, and that is, you know, that's the homeland.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me. I loved it.
That's Matt Gross, a food and travel writer. We've been talking about a recent piece he wrote called How the Chili Pepper Took Over the World. He's working on a book on that very topic. Again, we will hope to have him back. Still time for you to share your chili peppers, your favorites, your fears, your experiences for better or worse. You can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or as always, you can tweet us 24/7. At Central Time WPR.